folks, and welcome or welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, we are at two-thirds of our JREP Japan Real Estate Experts panel again. But fortunately, this time I got the ladies. So Tracy and Blanca and yours truly, we had a bit of an off-topic riff. Apologies to our listeners who aren't into these segues. We talked about annoying owner unions and building management companies, how to deal with those when you're running a mostly monthly rentals operation, how to conduct renovations while still complying with all of the building management bylaws and regulations, renting to singles versus couples or families, temporary workers and shared accommodation type tenants. And then we took a real deep dive into pets, cats versus dogs, single versus multi-level family homes, and a whole lot more. So really fun, let your hair down kind of conversation. Hope you enjoyed as much as we did, and I'll see you again on the other side. All right, Japan Real Estate Experts panel, JREP.
Is that your radio voice, dude? Is it?
Quick round of introductions. Ladies, I'm surrounded today.
Well, I'm usually surrounded by all the men, and now I've brought some sister support with me. Go for it, Blanca.
Hi there. Hi, everybody. My name is Blanca Kobayashi, and I'm the marketing director and co-founder of AgriForm. We are a bilingual reform company serving clients in the whole Kanto region. We help foreigners to renovate their properties or their businesses by offering them English services. And we also deal with Japanese clients. Also, we have very wide services. We can help you do anything and everything you need about your property.
Thanks, Blanca. I'm Tracy. I am your resident short-term rental minpaku expert. I've been doing minpaku for 10 years. So I'm a property manager for MIM for short-term rentals, as well as a host. And I'm also a coach. So I help people with their profitability on short-term rentals and also, you know, how to get into it and how to maximize your profits without discounting. That's what I'm a big fan of.
So and now you're a published author too.
And now I haven't got my book with me, but I am a published author. So I was trying to represent Japan in this book of stories from short-term rental hosts around the world. And it's an interesting project. And it was released on Monday. It's called Hospitable Hosts, and it went to Amazon number one immediately. So I'm a number one best-selling author.
Awesome. Congratulations. Is it available on Amazon Japan?
It's on Amazon Japan, actually. And right now, obviously, to game the algorithm, to get the Kindle is like 79 yen or something silly. So you can pick up that book for 79 yen on Kindle.
I like paper book.
there's also a paper book, so it's available in Japan, and like if you order it, you'll get it in like a day, and then you can bring it to me, Blanca, and I'll sign it, and I'll sign your, and I want you to sign, because I bought both of your books.
Yes, and
you're an author too, hang on.
Yes, me and my husband, we are publishing books about financial freedom. It's part of what we do. Besides real estate and renovations, we help people to reach financial independence and more of financial knowledge, how to grow in that department.
With real estate being a very,
with a lot of things. So the first book we published is basically it's a beginner's guide. So it kind of tells people what to do to get a job and how to start managing their finances, how to dig themselves out of debts and how to handle their finances. In a smart way, so they just don't spend and go, they don't go and spend everything at once and things like that. How to invest smartly, how to pull back money at the right time and things like that. It's funny because last 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, my husband met somebody that we were teaching about investments and who was coming to our seminars about blockchain investments, and the lady was very happy and she said, I'm so happy that I have met you and attended your seminars because I've made $100,000 on thanks to using your methods and your advices. So that was really rewarding. It was great.
What are the books called, Blanca?
Our book is called The Beginner's Guide to Financial Freedom.
Okay.
So... and we published both in English and in Japanese. So it's on Amazon worldwide. Available.
So if you could both send me links to where people can get the book later, we'll put them in the show notes.
Cool. Thank you.
And I'm Ziv Nakajima Magen, a partner, co-founder of Nippon Tradings International, or NTI for short. And we help foreign investors and holiday home shoppers, whether they're in Japan or out of Japan, purchase and manage and sometimes sell their properties. So we can do everything for you, and you don't even have to visit Japan nor speak Japanese at any step of the way.
But if you do visit Japan and you want to check out your investments, there's always short-term rentals that you can come and stay in.
In Tokyo, and the renovations are just in Kanto too. I can't wait for the both of you to start expanding beyond that little bubble of yours.
Yeah. First they're going to come to Tokyo. They'll stay with Tracy. Then they buy a property off you and I'll renovate it for them.
Yeah.
you renovate. You just do Kanto at the moment? Blanca?
We do, but we right now we have a customer that wants us to renovate his property in Shimoda.
Ooh.
So I see some very nice business trips.
But they're buying a family home. It'll be Emil, who's not with us today. He's in the US. He's the one to help with that. But anywhere else in the country, most definitely. And if it's not a family home, we're probably the go-to as well. And we spoke last time about the difference in renovations between renovating your own home and an investment property. I was wondering if we could chat a little bit about, because both of you are probably well experienced, or I should say maybe well burned by the topic of annoying owner unions and building management company. Right? See, roll your eyes. Exactly. I had a thing today where we've got customers who are selling their properties, and when you sell a property, you need to get information from the building management company. You need to know the renovation history of the building. You need to know how much they got in the reserve fund. This is all information that potential buyers want to know. And they're a pain in the bum. Half of them just say, we got it here. She wants to come over and have a look in the office. Well, we've got the books here. Like, can't you send us something like a scan or anything? We're on the other side of the country. And I know there are a lot of trouble for short-term stay operators, and there are a lot of trouble for renovators as well, right?
Yeah.
Definitely for short-term rental operators. There is, I think the general rule of thumb is that if there is for apartment buildings where there's multiple owners and there is a kumeyai, it's going to be impossible to get a short-term rental license. It's just not even worth like wasting your time.
But even if you do it monthly rentals, which, you know, they're not officially allowed to bar you from doing, they still give you a hard time, right?
They still give you a hard time. But to be honest, like, you know, you're going to have some pretty serious marketing chops to fill up a monthly, month-to-month rental. Like, you know, it's not something that you can, you know, unless you've got some pretty significant history, or you've got a really big database of customers, or you've got some really good corporate alliances with people that are bringing in either students, like, you know, on a regular basis, or interns or something along those lines. Unless you've got that, unless you've got that pipeline of customers, it's really hard to set up a monthly business, because the market, like, Look at what Oyo did. This is pre-pandemic. Oyo, the Indian short-term company, a hotel/boutique hotel company, tried to really, you know, enter the Japanese market. They were very, very aggressive, taking all the staff from Expedia and HomeAway, and they had like 300 people in a very short amount of time. And I said right then, I said, this market is not going to sustain these all of these monthly rentals, because there's just not enough, you know, there's, and again, unless you've got the pipeline of people that are coming in needing the month-to-month rentals, it's just gonna keep the price pressure downwards. Is just not sustainable. And they closed up shop. I mean, they were closing up shop before even the pandemic hit, and then pandemic was the final nail in the coffin.
Well, they weren't really active, but I know from our experience working with customers who do that, there are companies like similar to Minpaku operators. There are property managers that specialize in monthly rentals.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you, like I said, if you've got the pipeline, if you've got the marketing channel, and you've got the SEO, like if you're going to be hitting on those keyword searches, and then you're fine. But starting up from scratch against some of these people is you're going to find it tough.
Yeah. But still, I mean, what do in your, so you're not super active in the monthly rentals space, are you? Like, have you had run-ins with building management companies or owner unions specifically in that area?
No, not monthly. No, but I mean, these are the days before regulations. Obviously, we came up against like really hard against some of the building regulations, and we moved out of a number of places. Yeah. This before we needed a license in short-term rentals, we were booted out of a couple of places. Yes. Even though we had like the owner's permission, the kumeyaai went and they, you know, they had emergency meetings and drew up and put in new bylaws, put in new clauses.
You were the topic of an emergency meeting, Tracy?
Yeah, that's why we had to close our short-term rental, because the building would just not allow it. There were several owners. And the biggest deal was that in the third and fourth floor was an accommodation. The whole floor, the fourth floor was like a hotel, and the third and fourth floor, they built in a capsule hotel. So they were not interested at all to have any other short-term rental in the building.
Competition, right?
Yeah. That was the minute the laws came in, they basically, you know, shut everything down. And when it comes to all these, you know, all the commissions and the kumeyaai and stuff, we are dealing with one of that right now in terms of property rental, where the owners, they want their property renovated, but it's in a mansion. So you have to discuss with the mansion management what is actually allowed, what is not allowed. And of course, there's a lot of things that it's not allowed. So even if you want to replace an air condition, you cannot drill a hole where the hole is not. So God forbid you would want to, there's one room that we wanted to put a normal air condition, and they would just not allow us.
This is an apartment that is owned by somebody.
Yeah, it is an apartment that it's owned by somebody. We are contracted by the owner to do a complete renovation of the property. But because it's in the mansion, you have to you have to submit your work or what you're going to do, inform the management company. Because if you were to drill a hole where you're not supposed to,
like in a public wall, for example.
Yeah, like on the public wall, or if you would place something where it's not supposed to be placed, it is me as a reform company that is responsible for it, not the owner, despite I'm doing the job based on the owner's wishes. So I would be responsible. I would be the one paying the fines as a company. So we have to always make sure that everything is done as per the law and the regulations of the building. Otherwise, we as a renovation company are the one responsible for the jobs and for the fines that come with it.
And they can also make it difficult with scheduling too, right? They only allow you to work certain hours of the day or certain days of the week.
Yes, they will allow you only to work specific hours, of course. Some properties don't even allow you to work weekends. Some do, but you have to kind of announce ahead. We are lucky that this property is in the first floor, second floor, so we don't need to really use the lift that much. But we can use the stairs for most of the things, only for like the biggest, heaviest things, we will have to use the elevator. We have to even say from what time to what time we're going to be using the elevator, on which days. We have to put in the protective sheets, then clean up the whole thing. Of course, then they will tell you you also have to clean up the whole hallway, despite you don't even make it dirty.
Yeah.
So they kind of use it up that, you know, you make the clean, you do the cleanup for them during basically every day during the renovations.
Yeah. I guess that, I mean, it's a kind of contradiction. I mean, on the one hand, they're a pain in the bum for contractors and providers like us. But I guess on the other hand, that's what they get hired for, the building management companies,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's their job, I guess, to be annoying to everybody. But they, in a way, they protect the owners of the properties because, you know, you have to deal with them. You don't have to deal and be inviting people for a meeting. You deal directly with the management company, and the management company kind of already knows most of the cases, because you are definitely not going to be the first one that is doing something in the building. So they are already kind of familiar. So they just go case by case, you know, and then tell you, you can do this, you can't do that, you know, you can only work these days and stuff like that. So, yeah.
I mean, I will say that even though these kumeais make it hard to, you know, to work around, that it does make a big difference to the quality of life of the people who are like residents there. And the reason I say that is that there's a few buildings around town where it's owned by one owner who's really not interested, who's really just bought a building and has allowed, I'm talking Minpaku here because that's what I know, so the owner will allow individual renters to do Minpaku, but because there's no kumeai, there's no real sort of doorman, and the owner is just really not interested, the quality of the building for the other people who live there really goes down. So there's a couple of not very good Airbnb hosts who let the guests go wild, and they let the guests not put the trash out where they're supposed to. So it's all those things like the trash disposal, and it's nasty. I've seen some properties that are completely nasty because, you know, no one's really interested in the quality of life for the current residents, but and also for the guests. So I feel bad for the guests who go and book these places. Yes, they're cheap, and they probably won't see the host, but they won't see the owner of the building either. And it's just the trash. Oh, my goodness. I've seen some buildings. It's just awful. But because dumping is, you know, there's illegal dumping, and, you know, the stairwells are unsafe because people, again, no one's watching me, so I'm going to behave badly.
Yes.
And so that's what happens. So human nature, unfortunately.
I came across a case when, I don't know if you've read it, Tracy, in one of the groups we are in, that a lady was renting and wanted to get a cat. And she knows the owner of the property. So the owner of the property told her, okay, go ahead, déjà vu. And she informed the management company that, oh, she's getting a cat because the owner of the apartment or house, I'm not sure if it was a house or apartment, I think apartment, like a mansion, smaller mansion, so that the owner told her, gave her okay to get the cat, and the management company still vetoed that and told her she cannot.
Yeah, that's a lot of, I mean, if somebody contacts us asking, looking for a place, and a lot of people say, oh, you know, we're open to renting, we're open to buying, we don't mind particularly, but we got this pet, we will immediately say, just don't even right. try. It's just
don't even try. Yeah. No, it's true. It's true because, you know, people don't want it. And then you immediately have problems with the other people, especially if there is an elevator. You have a problem to bring your pet out using the elevator and stuff like that. So, I mean, nobody just wants to deal with that. You know, barking, if it's a dog, you are dealing with barking. Yeah, there's a lot of issues.
That's a good potential for a business, actually. I think my partner, Chikako, is actually deeply into helping stray cats, stray animals, basically. But in Japan, it's mostly cats. And I mean, she's really seriously thinking about getting a group of investors together to purchase a building where not only where pets will be allowed, but also where you can actually get a unit for cheaper rent if you commit to adopting an animal, right?
There is one like that in Tokyo. Yes, there's one like that in Kyoto. There is one like that in Saitama. We support the lady in Saitama because she helps me. I have a stray cat issues in the Akiya next to my house. So she helps me with those cats. And the lady in Saitama, she has around 60 to 80 cats at the time in her house.
Wow.
It's so you can tell it's a full-time job. The problem is they're always running out of funds and always running out of volunteers to help. Especially right now during Corona, because before they would offer free accommodation for helping out at the shelters. But right now, because there are no people coming in, they have enough volunteers and enough workers. So it's not only about the property, I think, to get the manpower and then get the feeding and the vet issues, because at that point, the vet bill, it's just crazy. We send them food every now and then, because they always have like Amazon wish list and something. So a few times a year, I send them, you know, a care package. People support them financially, you know, send them issues. When she comes to our house, my husband tries and gives her money, you know, when she comes and helps out with the neighbors. But this issue is honestly not about the property. The issue is how you're going to sustain it monthly.
Yeah.
If you don't have sponsors to back you up and commit. Because I know that Mina's Animal Sanctuary in Chiba, she's renting a house and she has animals of all sorts. It's not just cats. She has cats, dogs, goats. She has some lizards, parrots. I think she has a pig. I mean, she has everything. The girl has everything. She's amazing. But it's a 24-hour job.
Yeah.
And so she can't do anything else. And then she has volunteers sometimes to come and help. But the cash is the biggest issue.
I think Chika's not really into running NPOs and stuff, but she was really looking for a viable business model that would somehow, like social impact investing kind of thing, where it would actually also be able to generate money for investors and help those animals, right?
It would definitely not generate any money for anybody. It's just companies can do it if they have that kind of feeling towards, and they have spare money to dump every month. That's the only way.
As a lot of people that I know that are involved in the catch neuter release programs, and it's the vet bills. I mean, obviously you have a vet that does it for cost, but it's not a zero cost. And because the feral cat issue is really, really big especially around Chiba.
Old houses.
I mean, there are places. It is, like we said before, it is hard to get a place that will actually allow you to have a pet. So I'm guessing there might be some financial viability there if you provide that option to people.
I think having a bunch of rental properties that allows cats would be a good market. Especially, I know that it's difficult. I don't know how in your area, but in Tokyo, it's difficult to find a property that allows you with bigger dogs. So bigger dogs is a big issue. So if you can, like, you know, accommodate bigger dogs, then you would definitely find a clientele, because people, especially now, again, a lot of people got pets, you know, during That's Corona, nice. And they realize it's so nice to have a companion. And more people want to have a cat or a dog, but they simply can't. So having a separate set of listings that allows animals is actually very good.
Like a Minpaku friendly building, pet friendly building.
Yeah, in Matsudo, in our area, I know that there is one real estate agent that specializes on pet friendly apartments.
That's nice.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So, you know, something, have a part of your portfolio that it's like that. I think that one would be very helpful.
Yeah, there's a lot, and there's a lot of hidden animals as well. I know I hid a cat for a very long time.
I feel comfortable saying this because this is in English, but we've got 3 strays in our place. We're only allowed to have one.
It happens a lot, but the problem is that, like, the animal shelters, the adoption centers, they will not allow you to adopt a cat or a dog because you have to show that your rental agreement allows pets.
Yeah.
And they come for checkup if you are an unknown person, if you are a first-time client. So there's a little bit of a problem there. You cannot right now skip it, because they had issues very often that people would just take a dog or a cat or any animal. And then, you know, sooner or later, the landlord finds out, and then they have to, you know, give it up. And then usually they come back to the shelter and they go like, oh, I can't have it after all, so do something.
We interrupt this broadcast. I always wanted to say this. We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really, the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed Minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits, or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorgies, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
So
we got ours when we still owned the house. Now we sold the house and bought an apartment. So we didn't get the double check. Like, nobody actually came back to see where we're living at the moment. But our kumiai only allows one. But I don't know, from the tapping of paws that I'm hearing on the upstairs floors once in a while, I think a lot of people have more than one.
Yeah. If it's already a pet-friendly building, you know, they don't, I don't think they really bother that much unless, you know, you start running around the hallway with your 20 cats or 20 dogs. So I don't think that one is that big of an issue.
With the big dogs, do you find that house landlords are a bit more open to that? Like if somebody is renting a house with a yard, would the landlord usually be okay with a big dog?
Yeah, the houses with the yards, I think they kind of counting on that. As, like, I have several friends that have a bigger dogs, and so they are always, they are looking for houses, because apartments, I like, you know, it's few apartments that would allow really big one, or the really expensive one. I have expat friends that are here and they have huge dogs, but because of the rent that they are paying, or the companies are paying for them, it's not that big of an issue.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all, I think it's all about money anyways. Eventually, you know, if you are paying, putting down a good deposit, and they know that after you leave, they just, you know, you also, I know that the dog friendly or animal friendly apartments, you have to put down far bigger deposit than for
yes,
a normal property.
Yes, that's the case.
So when you put down a good enough deposit, you know, you are not getting it back because they will use it for a complete renovation of the apartment after you. So if you are okay with that, I think that there's a, you know, there's a way to handle it. But it's about the it's about the property owners, I think, really. Like, I wouldn't mind if somebody has a cat or a smaller dog in our house that we are renting. I don't know if big dog would be okay, or if it's an older dog maybe. But like, when you get a puppy, you know the puppy is gonna chew on everything. Right. So I think it kind of depends. And then, you know, cats, I think cats are like, our cat is pretty okay. He doesn't really reap much. And, you know that if you're leaving, if people are leaving, you know, you have to change the wallpaper. Mm. So that one is not that big of an issue.
Is there a cat repellent wallpaper? You know, maybe that's something that you could be doing. like Blanca is like, well, if
there's definitely sprays that you can spray on the wallpaper.
It does not. And you're not going to spray the wallpaper. No.
If you
have a cat in your house, you're not going to do that.
When we had a cat, we put up, because even though I had a scratching pad, of course, they didn't want to use the scratching pad. They wanted to use the balls. But we put up the clear plastic film on the bottom half of the wall, and the non-cat scratching film. I mean, yes, you've got to live with plastic film on your wall, but it's clear. But we got 100% of our deposit back every single time.
When you're renting, you kind of have to live with some of the adjustments that you do if you have an animal, you know. So I think it's all kind of case by case.
If you own the place too, I mean, you know that you're going to be renovating in a higher frequency if you've got pets, right?
The
sliding screen walls, what do you got? The shogi? Shoji? What do you call them?
Shoji.
Shoji, yeah. Those cats love breaking through those.
So do toddlers.
I tell you one thing, children cause far more damage than most animals do.
But nobody can tell you no children. Actually, we did have one building where the owner union said no single mothers. Oh, they tried to say. We told them where they can stick it, but they tried to refuse one of our tenants because she was a single mother.
What? Sorry, yeah. I'm going to be horrified about that all day.
Yeah.
What does it matter if someone's a single mom?
Well, apparently, you know, kids are more noisy when they've only got one parent. I don't know. Don't ask me. Single. They try to refuse single mother tenant.
That is horrible. Yeah. You know, when you are renting, you're kind of always thinking, we actually wanted a family. When we were renting our place, we were giving a priority to families, especially young families or like couples that got married over, for example, single people. Because if you're thinking long term, the families kind of tend to stay because then the kids, you know, go to school and they kind of lay roots. Single person is in and out, can move anywhere, and then they are the parties, right? We wanted to avoid the parties. So, you know, we gave preference actually to families because, first of all, we are a family, we like that, but we gave one of the reasons why we gave preference to families, whether single mothers or, you know, couple, young couple, was that we wanted the kids in the house So they kind of, you know, you feel like they're going to stay longer. And, you know, it's just a better, I think it's a better better vibe than you're giving a home to.
Well, they take better care of the property, too, if they got a family. Single people, unless they're really fancy single people, most of them don't really take that good care of a property. And they definitely stay longer.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the reasons they stay longer, unless they move the father somewhere. Because, you know, in Japan, they like to move the workers around every few years.
Yeah.
But if the family already lives there, sometimes they opt that the family stays and the father kind of commutes to work.
Yeah.
Depending.
Yeah, we've got that a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah. We also get a lot of these fathers renting single room units from us during the week. And then on the weekend,
absolutely,
they go back home to the family.
We have one here in Roppongi, because if you need to work and you need to work late, it's always better just, you know, to sleep over, especially if you have morning meetings. It's easier to just sleep over a night or two than be commuting every, you know, every day. So
yeah,
it works really well.
I've read somewhere that in Japan, a lot of the, like a large percentage of divorces actually happen when the husbands retire and suddenly show up at home, right? Like, you're not supposed to be here. You are commuting the entire week for the last 20 years.
What am I going to do with you?
Yeah.
That was the biggest problem of Corona.
Mm.
The biggest problem of Corona was that with the work from home, people just didn't know, couples, or, you know, they just didn't know what to do together. They could not tend in to be in the same apartment because they were so not used to it.
That's why Emile did so well, because people were then, you know, getting rid of their like local small apartments and going further out so that they get bigger houses, right? So they could everyone needed their space. So it is a real trend, and of people really you know, decentralizing. Interesting, though, I did see an article today that it's been announced that from next year, inbound workers of various categories are going to have indefinite visa status.
Yeah, I read that one.
Good. So that's going to be really interesting for inbounds. So restaurant workers, Blanca, restaurant workers, food, you know, food factories, a lot of it's factory workers, obviously, aged care, aquaculture, those types of things. So if you have a specialty in any of those categories, including restaurant, and this is service jobs as well, you can get an indefinite visa.
I love Kishida-san more and more. When he came into power, I kind of thought he was, oh, he's just like another Abe clone, but he's a stealth assassin, kind of. The economic policies and some of the things he's announcing are refreshing.
Oh, except the borders opening. Come on, let's be real.
He's doing stuff that, you know, maybe the voters wouldn't go for, but he knows is needed, right? Like this indefinite visas thing. Imagine if he was saying, we're going to allow a bunch of immigrants in and they can all settle in Japan.
They don't have people to work, so of course
he'd never be elected
something.
Again, but he's aware of the fact that they're needed. So let's just call it an indefinite business visa.
Yeah, but that's going to be really interesting when you have restaurants that are fully staffed by foreign workers. It's going to be a very big culture shock to local people. But whether those people are out the back washing dishes like they are in the US, right? In the US, all of the migrant workers are the dish pigs and the, you know, the bus boys and all of that. Whether that becomes like this sort of two-tiered system, like front of house is going to be, you know, the uketsuke, the Japanese keigo speaking person, and then out the back they've got the lower paid immigrant workers. That is a possibility as well.
I think it depends on the location.
Sorry,
it's going to depend on location. Absolutely,
I mean, here in Fukuoka, at least 50% of the convenience stores I go to are fully Nepalese. Like, there's
absolutely here too. Absolutely, and supermarkets And I always did, I have actually had a couple of chats with them just to make sure, okay, you're coming in, are you being paid a wage? Are you being paid a fair wage? And I asked them very clearly, like, you speak, you're bilingual, like you speak English, whatever is your native language, and they've given you like really good Japanese. I want to make sure that you're not being exploited, especially because they're young women as well. And I'm like, you know, passionate about that. And it's like, you know, are you, and I've asked people, are you being paid a living wage? What is your living conditions like? You know, and I've asked people, and they seem to be happy enough. So, it's going to change the service standards, and it already has a little bit. So it's going to be
the living conditions are really important, because I think a lot of those workers are kind of being cramped up. I had to refuse when we were looking for tenants for our mansion. We have a 3-bedroom mansion, and we were looking for tenants for there. And I was approached by a language school that supplies teachers, English teachers, to local schools of some sorts. And they basically, so they go like, do you have a minimum occupancy? I said, well, it's a 3-bedroom apartment.
You mean a maximum occupancy?
Yeah, a maximum occupancy. I'm like, what do you mean? And she said, oh, you know, it's a 3-bedroom apartment, so we would like to put in at least 6 to 9 people. And I said, are you crazy?
No.
It's like, you cannot. I was like, no, sorry, I can't do with that, because I would not support something like that.
I don't mind it if the tenants want to do it to save money. Like if they're actually renting the place themselves and they want to save money, like, you know, if it's within reason, like 2 or 3 of them, we wouldn't mind. But I would never cooperate with a company trying to put them in.
Would never. So I told her, I said, listen, no, we don't support this kind of, you know, business or whatever.
Three couples, though, a 3-bedroom apartment, that's 6 people. That's 1 bathroom, though. That's 6 people.
And that's a share house, bathroom, though, basically, Tracy, if you want to be running the share house.
Yeah. You know what my biggest problem was with the Olympics, but when I was coming checking your properties, was that
bathrooms,
the number of bathrooms, because in the morning, if the people are supposed to be getting ready and stuff, you need to make sure that they can shower and, you know, you do all the stuff. You cannot have 9 people in a 3-bedroom apartment with, you know, it's just, I was like,
And that's why I don't do share accommodation. And that's why, because the standard Japanese house, getting back to real estate, the standard Japanese house has 1 bathroom. They might have 2 to 3 toilets if it's a larger place, but traditionally everyone shares a bath and a shower. Like en suites are just not the thing. And so that's the biggest thing that I have with Minpaku, is that I cannot bear the thought of, you know, renting out individual rooms and having everybody share a bathroom and kitchen. Like, can't be on with that.
No.
I mean, even bigger groups, but if you're a family group, you're kind of going to be okay.
Japan has that, you know. I mean, we build properties in Africa as well, and over there, when you are building properties and you're counting on it to be rented out as a room, everything has to be en suite. It is always en suite.
Yeah. You know, always what? Sorry, say that again.
En suite basically meaning
en suite. Sorry, yes, yeah, accent.
You know, so so you have each of the room has its bathroom and shower.
Yeah. Even in Southeast, like especially in Southeast Asia. So you go to Thailand. And a 3-4 bedroom place, they've all got a bathroom attached.
Yes.
To it, so
same in our house. In our house back in Africa, every room has its toilet and its bathroom, like shower. And every room has that.
There's only 3 of us in our house, and it's a single toilet can be challenging even for 3 people. So I can't imagine 6 to 9. Yeah.
No. When I built my house, I designed it that we've got a toilet on every floor.
Yes.
And we've got 2 baths, because obviously one's in our minpaku, one's in our, you know, I don't know if I've actually talked about this before, is that I have a house hack. So I built a 2-generational house, so it's got 2 front doors, and with this, it's got an apartment, like a self-contained apartment on the ground floor, and it's got its own it's got its own unit bathroom with toilet and shower, and it's got its own kitchen, and then we've got our bathroom and our toilet, and then we've got another, and the toilet upstairs is actually my mother's. When she looked at the plans, she went, "Tracy, you're not getting any younger. You're gonna want a toilet on the same floor as your bedroom." And I went,
"You got a point."
Yeah,
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I'm like so grateful to my mother for that, because it was the best design feature we added in the whole house.
Yeah. I'm not that old yet and I'm over stairs already, I can tell.
Oh, you. My dream house or more like my next house is going to be one floor.
One floor?
Yes. One floor. I just have to find a big enough land.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, enough. Well, there's a friend of mine. He built in Kyoto, and he built on one floor, a three bedroom house, and built it on one floor, and actually has enough space for a deck and whatever. And it's just like, he said, I'm not getting any younger. Like, yeah. And it is genius. That's his he and his wife. That's their forever house now. Yeah. And they've got enough space if people want to come stay, like his parents, her parents, for example, and it's all on one level.
It'd be crazy expensive in Tokyo, though, wouldn't it?
We had one. Our house before the one that we have now, it was all one floor. The problem, though, was that the windows, it was basically open floor plan for the kitchen, dining, office, and the living room. So, and with the windows, ceiling, floor to ceiling windows, on both sides, it was beautiful house, but you cannot heat it up and you cannot cool it down. And after getting ridiculous amount of electricity bills every month, I was like, no, I can't live here. I actually can't live here, because I would have to start breaking the walls and kind of separating the rooms, and then the whole magic of the house would be gone. So we sold it and bought a different house, but it was really nice because it was all one floor.
Your house now is only two levels, right?
Yeah, it's two levels. It's smaller than the house before. The land is big. The land is 500 square meters.
But it's huge. Like, you know, the octagonal house that you
live Japan, in. For Japan, it's
for big. For Japan, it's huge, yeah. But we live in a very, like, a pencil jobby. So, yeah. You know, yeah. tall and skinny, and our garden is on, like, on the fourth yeah. floor.
I have the good thing for me is that I have the garden before the entrance, then I have the kind of farm and the greenhouse on the side, and then I have the big space in the back for the barbecues and
yeah.
you know, all that stuff. So, I mean, the space, the land is pretty big. It's nice. So, yeah, we got lucky with that property, really lucky.
Well, it's just good for, like, you know, my stair climber every day. I'm up and down those stairs. But when you walk out the front door and you go, oh, God, I left something on, like, on the fourth floor, it's just like, oh, no. So, you know, it's good, but it's good for my butt, you know, walking up the stairs.
Yes, good for your butt too.
yeah, but I mean, having, you know, it is a sacrifice living in central Tokyo, having, you know, not having any garden. So it's, we do want to back to the pet thing, we do really want a pet, but it's like, what sort of pet can you have when, you know, there's, especially when a pet gets old, to go up and down stairs, it's really hard for them.
Oh, cats are pretty good with that.
Simba is up and down the stairs all the time.
Yeah, I'm a cat and a dog person, but my son he really wants a dog, because we are close to Yoyogi Park, so.
Can he walk it three times a day?
Well, of course, it would come back to me.
There you go. And
we've got no undercover. Like, when it's we dog sit. I shouldn't actually say this publicly, but we've dog sitted a number of times for friends, because we own the place. We don't have issues yeah. with dealing with kumiais, and so we're quite happy to dog sit. But you know, when it's raining, it's me that takes the dog out, like, for the 10 p.m. before bed wee. It's just like, raincoat on, it's like, hurry up, dog.
You know? Yeah, I love dogs, but no thank you to that.
Cats are so easy. I mean, you literally have no stress with the cat.
Except when they wake you up three times a night asking for
Simba
food.
Doesn't do that.
Really?
Simba did it at first when he, like, last year, but now he's already so trained. He knows we are sleeping. He doesn't even sleep with us in. Of course, he cannot come to our
That's
bedroom,
really good cat.
But not even, he has his own places where he sleeps, and he literally does not come, make noise until he hears, like, for example, if David's getting up, then he will come.
Can you send them over to train our cats?
Well, I'm seeing now you're talking me into getting a cat, but
it's
I'm
like a
about
child
adopting an older. I think I'm keen on adopting an older cat, maybe one like not a kitten. Kittens are cute, but it's just like, oh no.
But then the way you teach it, the way you have it, you know, we got Simba when he was 3 months old. So, and you know, the way you teach him, so it's kind of, it's nice. And I think it's easier to bond with, to create the bond with the kitten. So, but you know, helping an older cat on the other hand is nice. And then you don't have, then you know that you are not signing up for 20 years, you know.
Chica is usually the one that she's the mother of cats in our house. They're crazy in love with her and she does everything for them. And then she went on a business trip to Nara one night. So it was just me sleeping there. And 2 o'clock in the morning, it was nya, 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 feed me. And then 4 o'clock in the morning, nya, 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 pat me. And then 5 o'clock in the morning, they just ran around and spilled water or something. And that was it for my night.
No, you didn't get up at 2 a.m. and feed them, right?
Well, it's kind of within arm reach from the futon, like the go around the kitchen. I just need to crawl a little bit and put something in the mouth.
Get an auto feeder and they just like, they learn how to like butt it and feed themselves.
I can't, they're overweight. I can't, they're not allowed to feed themselves whenever they want.
We have an auto feeder that it's set up for 6 a.m., 12 noon and 6 p.m.
Oh, you can decide. Well, so it's not whenever they want.
No. We have it. It's on a timer. You can set up the amount of food you want.
Ooh, I'm looking into that right now as we speak. That's the next birthday present. Thank you.
Yeah, and it was great, you know. And so it gives him 6 a.m., 12 noon, 6 p.m. gives him a little bit of kibble, and
don't talk to me. Talk to the feeder. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, look, we are coming up to the end of the hour, so yes. You know, what I want to know is topics that our listeners want us to talk. I mean, otherwise, look, we'll just, you know, if you want to watch. Well,
look, Emil's not here. We can talk about anything.
No, but it's just like, you know, the people who watch this regularly or listen to this regularly on the podcast, like, you know, obviously if you just enjoy our banter and you just want to have a look into our life, that's totally fine. I do sign autographs on my new book, no problem. But the
conversation did start from pet friendly properties, so we do have an excuse.
Did come to full circle with the kumeis and also, you know, the reform part. Yeah, so we did well today. But you know, again, oh look, sorry about that. No, I don't know if you can hear that noise. There's new buildings going, you know, going on everywhere. Construction in Japan is just nuts. Mm. What do people want to know about? What are they curious about?
Absolutely.
We can meet your needs. So.
Yeah, we had some questions about investment, but I kind of answered the questions in the comments and nobody ever says, oh, I wish you could talk about this and that on the podcast. So yes, this is listeners, viewers, please tell us what you want us to talk about aside from cats.
Yeah.
And like and subscribe and so forth.
Like and subscribe.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Consider subscribing. I think that's the rules that you got to say now.
Yes. Oh, consider subscribing.
Oh, really? It's the rules now this way.
Well, yeah. I mean, telling, you know, like you must subscribe. You know, that apparently that's.
We'll never talk to you again if you don't subscribe. All right. Thanks for your time, ladies. See you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, so there you have it. Cats, owner unions, families, and temporary immigrant workers. Everything under the sun, basically. Hope you had fun with this one. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great...